Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, we are joined by Leslie Appleton Young. Leslie is Vice President and Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with over 150,000 members dedicated to the advancement of professionalism in real estate. Leslie directs the activities of the association's member information group. She oversees the analysis of housing market and brokerage industry trends, member communication, and membership development activities. She also closely involved in the association's strategic planning efforts and is a well-known speaker in California. Leslie, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Bruce.
One of the things that I've noticed that's been on the increase is the percentage of equity sellers. And,
yes.
And that's probably a very significant development because, in a way, that's an acknowledgement that they're not going to see tomorrow or 2006 prices anyway soon.
Right. I think it's an embracing reality and also recognizing that whatever they're going to do next in real estate, it's a good time to do it. You know, so if you're selling today and trading up, you're going to be fine. If you're trading down and maybe also doing some kind of an investment property, there's a lot of things that you can do to get the advantage of the positives in this market, even though you're selling at a price that a few years ago you would have been somewhat disappointed in.
Yeah, and really when you're buying in the same market, it's sort of like, okay, well, what's the big deal?
Right, right. But people have a lot of emotional attachment, and, you know, as we noted last week, you know, you've got almost 30% of the mortgages in California underwater. So people are in distress, and many of them are stuck right now.
Yeah. The reason people buy in 2012, how different is it from the buyer in 2006?
Well, I think you've got more first-time buyers, and you also have a little bit of a return, and you kind of alluded earlier. You've got more of the trade-up situation going on because those equity sellers have finally said, wow, this really isn't such a bad time. In fact, it's a pretty good time. I'm gonna get with it. Whereas if you look back in 2006 and 2007, it was really a market dominated by REO purchasers and, you know, larger investors, even smaller investors. But it was more kind of like, these prices are so low, let me buy as many as I can and do my business model that way. So I think, you know, when you look at the market today, it's much more balanced, if you will. Now it depends on the area. You know, if you look at the sales that closed escrow in April, 58% were equity sales, about 22%+ were REO, and about 19.4 or 5 were short sales. So you've got a little bit of a balance between short and REO, with a little bit more on the REO side, and then the rest being equity sales. When we first started to come out of the bottom, the kind of REO market was well over 50% in many areas, and likely close to that statewide as well. So we certainly have, over the past several years, whittled down on at least the available inventory of REO to the extent that now you've got a 2-month supply, and in some areas it's less than that, of inventory of REO.
You know, one of the things that you touched on in the first segment, the words shadow inventory. FHA, for instance, has 41,000 REOs approximately right now, but they have over 700,000 people that are 90 days late.
Right.
So there's, and, you know, Fannie and Freddie have similar stories, and the loan mods have similar percentages.
Right.
What do you think is going to happen with that inventory? And do you think they're just going to really dole it out over time, or going to take it to the sidelines as rentals?
Well, I think they're going to keep doing what they have been doing, which is dole it out over time, because I think that's the only thing that really makes sense for them in terms of managing their balance sheet and kind of recognizing the losses on those assets, if you will. It's interesting. It seems like every year, although not for the last year or two, but initially, people would have a date, like, have you heard that on September 15th, all of the banks are going to dump all of their closed properties in one day? I don't know if you heard heard things like that. But and it didn't happen, and it won't happen. But that is not to say that this problem is not going to be with us for quite some time, 4 or 5 more years in some areas, because it's just there's no, like, magic bullet here. It's really one property at a time, and one loan at a time. And I think the impact of various programs will kind of ebb and flow. But as you noted earlier, it takes time for the lenders to kind of work through each and every one of these. And it's going to define our market for a while. All that being said, is every year the market seems to be a little bit different. And certainly this market, with fairly robust sales for six months in a row, I think is showing that people are very able to be more responsive today to the advantages of the market.
What percentage of those sales do you think investors are buying?
I think the investor sales in California are probably over 20%.
Okay.
Certainly in some areas they're significantly higher. All cash purchases have been about 25%. I know NAR had a number that was in excess of 30% a couple of months ago, and obviously not, there are, non-investors who are paying all cash for homes, but it's a very, it's a very significant part of the market. And about, 80% of them are investing to rent, and maybe the other 20 are kind of reselling them, flipping them, fixing them up, and so on. But again, that's going to vary by market.
What's interesting is we've had one heck of a recession, and if you look at household formation, it really didn't happen. We're way behind on household formation, and at some point, the echo boom generation is going to play catch up.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, and you do see an article from time to time talking about the coming housing boom, and when you look at kind of the lifestyle choices that generation has had to make, given how lackluster the job opportunities have been, and the doubling and tripling up of families and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. At some point, they're going to have the income, and the market's going to be conducive, job market, for them to kind of break free and enter the housing market. The new construction was just hit very hard and has started to come up the last couple of years, but is still well below the 200,000 plus units we need a year to kind of house everybody. So things will be changing, but again, as long as the economy is as challenged as it is, and I don't need to list all the wild cards, like the Eurozone, and there's just and Japan's slowing and India's slowing. I mean, there's a lot of global trends that are going to impact our economy and our financial environment. So there's a lot going on.
You bring up a good point, because it's either a lot more confusing than I ever acknowledged, or it is more confusing than it ever has been.
I think it is more confusing than it ever has been. But
okay.
I may be wrong, but it's certainly the recognition of the impact of all these forces outside of our control, I think, is more heightened than ever.
Yeah, Mark Zandi came out just an article today saying, the GDP or the growth of the United States really dependent on the end result of Greece. And you're just going, Greece is the size of Rhode Island, and it's going to have that big of an impact. And it's kind of frustrating that as a local investor in Riverside, I actually have to pay attention to a lot of things outside of real estate and outside of our country.
Well, absolutely, because the you know, financial community is a global community, and everyone is a player, and everyone's exposed to Greek debt and the Eurozone. So all of that, and I think that's the thing that the financial crisis was a real wake-up call, that it's not just about, you know, me and my little area, but I am directly impacted by what goes on overseas. And it is overwhelming.
I think it was Mark Zandi that also said that we sometimes have a tendency to create today's policy solving yesterday's crisis.
Right, right. I heard him speak in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and he was, right on target with comments just like that.
Yeah, because we are dealing with Dodd-Frank and qualified residential mortgage as if that's going to really be a game changer, and it isn't. You know, a lot of the requirements for that loan is not necessary.
Well, it will be a game changer in a very negative direction.
Absolutely.
I think that's the way I see it, and I certainly, you know, one of the things that we've been concerned about is that in order for a mortgage to qualify, the loan needs to have 20% down. And, you know, you look at the last 10 years of what, you know, the GSEs have purchased, and less than, I don't know, 15% were 20, you know, less than 15%, I think, of the loans that they purchased would have qualified as a QRM under this definition. So it's very restrictive. And the data shows that the difference, the, you know, delinquency and foreclosure for, you know, 10%, 15%, and 20% down aren't that different. And to focus on 20 is really going to be a burden for a lot of first-time home buyers. So there's all kinds of policy implications tied up into what I think was a, you know, a real attempt to, you know, not let that happen again, but, you know, the pendulum always swings too far in either direction.
Yeah, and the timing of this, of course, is really not the best. We don't need to have the most restrictive lending policy when we have the affordability that's at all-time highs. You know, when you can actually buy something and reduce your monthly cost as opposed to rent, you would think that would be a good idea to be more aggressive as a lender than less.
Absolutely. And I think even, you know, we haven't talked about refis, but there's so many people that if they could just refi, you know, not take any nothing like that, but just a straight refi that would get them from 7% down to 4%, they'd stay in their home. They'd be able to stay in their home. And that, I don't understand why that isn't a doable thing.
Yeah, what's the difference? You already are in the position of 140% LTV. You might as well be at a 140% LTV with a loan somebody's going to make a payment on
that you can afford, because we know, and we saw this in the San Fernando Valley in the 90s. You know, people stayed in their communities even when they were underwater. You know, it's not a completely kind of rational, you know, profit, you know, utility maximizing decision, you know, when people look at their home and their community.
That's correct. Do you think, well, first of all, do you think Fannie and Freddie, and this is one of the things that it was my opinion when Sean and I were in front of them, that they gave me the impression that they didn't think they would exist in 10 years.
Well, I think that message has been sent loud and clear, right? And if you looked at the white paper that the FHFA came out with earlier this year, they essentially said as much, although the question is it a new entity? Is it a combined entity? And what does it do, even if it's a backstop? So there's a lot of unanswered questions that just haven't been fleshed out yet, and it's going to take a couple of years for them to do that. But certainly there's enough possibility of major change that I think we all need to be involved. And unfortunately, the reality is that any change that creates or eliminates, you know, creates an entity that eliminates the government guarantee. And I mean, look at our mortgage market today. Last year, well over 90% of the loans originated in the United States for homes were either Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or FHA.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way the market is. And so the kind of first pass argument is, whatever you're going to do, don't do it now. You know, when we have an industry and an economy that's trying to get back on its feet. But looking longer term, I don't think there's any doubt that there are changes that should and could and will be made. I think the point is to do it in a reasoned fashion so that you avoid as much as you can pitfalls and distress that's going to take the economy back where we don't want it to go.
I think one of the things that's going to happen in 2013 is we're going to have to get serious about generating some revenue and increasing taxes. And do you fear that real estate would be one of the obvious targets for some of the policy changes?
You know, I had the opportunity to go back with our leadership team a couple of months ago and walk the halls and go in and talk to the California congressional delegation, many of them. And I would say without a doubt, there's, you know, support for the mortgage interest deduction and a general feeling of what I just alluded to, which is this is not a time to mess with housing. It needs to get back on its feet. But it's also true that if and when a major effort at tax reform begins, which is likely to be after this election, everything is going to need to be on the table. And we were told that a couple of times by people that were very sympathetic. But the thought was, you know, if we take the mortgage interest off, then someone else is going to take their thing off, and somebody else is going to take their thing off, and pretty soon nothing is going to be on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we, you know, just being realistic about it, everything is going to be on the table, and we'll just have to see how it goes. You know, we've got the majority of the California congressional delegation has signed on to a resolution that's been passed around for the last 2 years supporting the mortgage interest deduction as it currently exists. But if you recall what happened in 1986, you know, you've got a midnight deadline and it's a, 3,000-page bill, and, you know, there's a timeline and people sign on and you get, you know, that's when we saw the mortgage interest deduction get capped at $1 million. And, you know, it's kind of hard to do an affordable housing argument against that kind of cap, but it does also leave open the door for further reductions down the line. So anyway, we will be obviously watching this and participating in these discussions with great interest.
Prop 13?
I can't imagine a time that Prop 13 will be looked at to in a realistic fashion to change. I think it's just too much a part of the landscape, the lore, the you know, the public support for Prop 13 is quite strong. And you know, you raise an interesting issue, and that is we have a budget in Sacramento that doesn't hold together for this year or really for the foreseeable future. And there are commitments made in terms of, you know, pensions and medical support and so on and so forth that are going to require an increase in taxes, higher revenue, or a reduction in those benefits. So it is not going to be for the faint of heart to watch that process going forward, because everybody's got something to protect, but the bottom line is we're just going to have to keep cutting back until we can afford what we're doing. And I think fiscal responsibility is extremely important, you know?
Well, you know, it's interesting. One thing the real estate boom did is provide lots of revenue that didn't exist before.
Well, it did.
And so it looks like we figured out that more revenue doesn't necessarily solve problems. So now we have a dearth of revenue, but if we're trying to get new revenue sources, I don't see how that's the solution. I think we really have to go to where the cuts are and say, okay, we've got
And that's what's happening. I mean, you are seeing cuts, and you will continue to see more and more cuts. And, you know, there's as I said, there's a structural issue with respect to the commitments the state has made and what it's legally required to do. It can't file for bankruptcy.
No, this, the local municipalities can, though. Chapter 9
absolutely.
Is an interesting study.
We've seen
study.
It in Vallejo and a few other cities. And I don't know if you've read Michael Lewis's book, Boomerang.
Yes.
But, you know, the last chapter in Boomerang is about San Jose, right? And what they're facing with, you know, with expenditures that were related to an economy that disappeared. And that promises that were made to public sector employees are now the bulk of their budget, you know, over the majority of their budget. So hopefully, you know, some lessons have been learned, but we're going to have to find our way out of it. And I agree with you. I think it's going to come with a mixture of those of cuts in revenue, but it's going to have to be primarily cuts.
Yes. Painful cuts, and that's why I think real estate won't leave the table unscathed. Hopefully, they'll leave some things that are important. You know, one of the things we have is we had quite a price decline, so you know, maybe a reduction in the amount of interest as far as up to a certain dollar amount wouldn't be the end of the world at this point.
Right. Right.
We go 3.5 minutes. Mortgage settlement for the California market.
Right.
Just a couple of figures, $12 billion for either write-downs or short sales. So
right.
Which are likely to occur? I mean, are they looking at principal reductions with that $12 billion?
You know, I haven't been following this that, you know, closely over the last month or two. I haven't really seen much in the press about what they're doing. I think the initial reaction was, this is great, but in California, it really is a drop in the bucket, if you will. And I'll have to be honest with you, Bruce, I just haven't read anything that's been an update on where it's all going.
Well, you're right.
Have you?
No, I think, well, I know where it's earmarked to go, but again.
Right, no, I know where it's, but I think it's probably too early in the game, in the process to have really seen an outcome yet.
Yeah, I'm on the City of Riverside Foreclosure Task Force, and it's anticipating knowing what kind of funds are going to be available and for what purpose. But as of now, they really don't know.
Right, right. You know, it's hard to get a little bit cynical after the last 5 years or so when you hear about a new program and it's going to do X and then it ends up doing just a teeny part of X, you know, and isn't very successful. So I'm certainly hoping that they will push this money out through to the, and I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. It just is taking time.
Sure. What percentage of the market now is first-time buyers? Because I know it got down to something like 37%.
Yeah, I think it's around 40%. We're going to have our annual market survey in the field next month, and that's really the data that I look at you know, most and have the longest time trend on. We recently just completed a home buyer survey, and about 40% of those of the people in that sample were first-time buyers. So I think that's kind of the general ballpark. And again, I think it would be higher if we had more inventory.
I'm sure it would. The membership, how is it holding up, and what's the mood like? We have 1 minute left.
Membership is peaked in 2006 at 211,000 realtors. This year, we're going to come in at about 158,000.
Which really is, I think, awfully good.
Well, I think it's awfully good, too, considering what's gone on in the market and the percentage of the business done by a smaller subset of agents. But all that being said, I think they are very busy, they are very engaged, and they are encouraged by the market fundamentals. And this is to say, after 4 or 5 years of complete and utter exhaustion, I think that there's definitely a new mood of I don't want to say optimism, but positivity.
Leslie, thank you so much for joining us. Again, go to www.cir.org for any updates. Leslie, again, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Always a pleasure, Bruce. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.